Hello and welcome to the latest Safer West Mercia podcast. My name is John Campion and I'm the West Mercia Police and Crime Commissioner. And we're joined today in a series of issues that we've done around domestic abuse by a very special guest, and I'll ask her to introduce herself and the organisation that she comes from.
Hello John, my name's Sue Coleman. I'm the Chief Exec of West Mercia Women's Aid. West Mercia Women's Aid is the specialist organisation that works with the victims of domestic abuse across the whole of West Mercia. Our services, as the title suggests, are primarily focused on working with women, but we do work with men, particularly with those men who are at high risk of harm. Our RIPA service works to support them in exactly the same way as they would support women. And we also have, within the domestic abuse service in Worcestershire that we run, a male victim service, because that's what Worcestershire wanted to commission in particular. So we do work with men too, and we see that work as being very important.
I'm a big fan of the voluntary work that we've got in West Mercia, and your organisation is a big part of that. I remember standing as commissioner back in the day and back in 2016 and talking about some of the services that are out there. And I remember at the time thinking, you know, what an amazing landscape that we've got, and the ability to invest in has been one that I've been proud to be part of, and to take the service forward. And provision for men, I think, is part of that. And because it happens to say Women's Aid in the title, I think it doesn't always recognise that it might be focused on women, but you are the experts in supporting survivors of domestic abuse. And to see that translate into how that supports men as well, for me, has been, I think, another reminder of how adaptable the voluntary sector is in this area of support for survivors. Sue, obviously, there might be, or there is, some stigma out there around male survivors of domestic abuse. You in your work have obviously started to see more and more male survivors come forward. In your sense of things, do you think that unrecognized harm that's out there is slowly starting to come into the light?
I think, well, there's certainly evidence when you look at the numbers of men that have been supported by our male victim service in Worcestershire. After that, the first year of that service being up and running, the number of men that contacted that service doubled. It doubled in the second year. And we weren't surprised that it would take time for services to become recognised, for people to know those services are there. But I think also the particular difficulty for men who are experiencing coercive control, abuse, bullying in their intimate partner relationships, it's accepting and recognising that they're in a position where asking for help is entirely appropriate. It's not easy for a man to see himself as a victim. Men aren't socialised in order to see themselves in that way. That whole big boys don't cry is still very much a part of our culture. So we recognise how hard it is sometimes for men in those positions to know that they need help and to ask for that help. And one of the first things that we do is to make sure that they understand that, in fact, they're not alone and they're as deserving of help and support as anybody else.
We don't know the full scale of it, but the academia and research tells us that in females, where we do have a better rate of reporting, there is still a huge amount that does go unreported in relation to domestic abuse. And one thing that I'm very clear about, just because we are wanting, of course, to get more men to come forward, there is no focus off the other journey that we've made in relation to females coming forward to report abuse. And we still don't really know, I don't think, the impact of social restrictions that we've had during the pandemic on what that has meant. And for me, I think we aren't yet seeing the impact in some of those relationships. And my fear as commissioner is, with our level of unreporting in both sexes, there may be the potential of building up towards some of the the very worst outcomes of domestic abuse that can lead to very serious violence and ultimately domestic homicides, for example. And that's why I think interventions and the ability for help to be provided, support to be given, that your types of organisation can do is really, really important, especially in these really uncertain times, because nobody quite knows, do they? They don't quite know what will happen next or what the impact has been.
Yeah, that uncertainty has really impacted on those living in abusive relationships. It's very difficult when you've been living with domestic abuse, when your self-confidence is eroded, when you feel trapped, when you feel hardly able to work out what to do next to get yourself out of that relationship. That's hard enough. But when you're living in a pandemic, when there's so much uncertainty around outside of your home, sometimes the best you can do is hope that you can get through it, because taking that leap of faith and asking for support and trying to move out of that relationship places you in an arena where everyone's not entirely sure what's going to be happening next. The level of uncertainty is heightened for all of us. So it's more than double, more than doubly unnerving and unsettling for those living in abusive relationships. So we haven't been surprised at seeing a fall in some of the demand for our services. And then as things that we found last year, for example, when the first lockdown was eased and people were starting to think, all right, I know what's going on here now. And it's okay for me to leave my home and I can now contact services. The stories we were getting from victims was that they really did feel doubly trapped because they were so uncertain if they took that step outside of the relationship, whether there would be anything there to catch them. And that is so frightening. It's not hard to understand why they chose to stay where they were. And as a consequence, the trauma of feeling trapped in that way will have had a lasting impact, and that will be on all victims of domestic abuse. We're hearing that time and time again now from callers to our helpline, from women coming into refuge, from men going to the male victim service, that actually that sense of feeling even more trapped than they were before during the pandemic, during lockdown, will have had a profound effect on them.
We're very lucky that you've recorded an interview with a male survivor of domestic abuse about their story, and really I think pertinent that we hear that now. If you want to introduce the interview and then we can hear it.
Yes, thank you. The person that I interviewed, Shaz, was a client of our RIDFA service. Our RIDFA service works with victims of domestic abuse where there's a high risk of significant harm, really significant harm for those victims. We work very closely with the police in particular and with the courts, and our focus is to make sure that individual is made safe as soon as possible and that safety is sustainable. I'm really grateful to Shaz for volunteering to tell his story. And I think the best thing to do is to leave it so that people can hear his own words.
Shaz, thank you so much for agreeing to talk with us. I wonder if you could first of all start by telling me about the situation that you found yourself in terms of your relationship.
Thank you, Sue, for having me. So my relationship with my ex-wife started soon after a few months of the dating. It was quite good initially and we were quite happy. And I was very open to her that I wanted to be with her for a long time, and she was very happy. I proposed to her, we decided to get married. And as soon as we got married, I started feeling that her behavior towards me changed drastically. She was quite supportive initially, and after the marriage, she was putting everything on me, that it's my responsibility now, I should lead each and everything. And soon after the marriage, she also held my passport and my visa card in her possession, and I was so isolated that I couldn't travel back to my family, I couldn't see my friends. I did wanted to go back, you know, to visit my family back in my home country, but because she was always kept my documents in her possession, I couldn't go anywhere. So that was like kind of like very controlling, and the control basically started from the beginning, and I was undermined and humiliated, like in so many different ways. And you know, whenever I try to have a conversation with her, she gets very violent, and she didn't like, you know, for me to basically ask any question and raise any concerns, like why she's doing that, what's the reason. So all kind of like those sort of things. And one of the things which she really manipulated was my race. She kept saying throughout the relationship that because I belong to a certain religion and my race is different from here, nobody's going to believe whenever I go and seek help outside. If I speak to anyone, no one is going to help me, no one is going to support me. Everyone is going to think that this is the guy who is trying to, you know, control the white lady here. It's kind of like a stereotype thing, which wasn't true at all, of course. But because I wasn't from this country and I haven't lived here for a very long time, I did believe her account, and I started thinking that whatever she's saying might be right. I couldn't go and, you know, like seek help from anyone. On so many occasions when I say to her that this is getting out of control and I can't be with her, because the physical abuse, the emotional abuse was so much, it's unbearable for me. I was, you know, I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep very well, and I did said to her that this is not right at all, and I want to leave. And every time she would say that she will change and she will become like a different person. Also during the pandemic, she held like knife on my throat on multiple occasions and said if I try to leave, she will kill me and then she will kill herself. I was under so much pressure, I couldn't go anywhere. So the relationship was basically abusive throughout. I couldn't seek help because I did believe what she said for a very long time, and until it came to a point where I was started feeling so much, you know, like cornered, so much isolated, and I knew I need to seek help. And finally, I did have some courage, and you know, to go out and ask help from the police.
So Shaz, can you tell us something about how you managed to make that break, and what then happened when you approached the police?
So for a very long time, I wanted to get out of the relationship, and I was thinking, how could I do that? My wife, she told me every time that if I go and tell anyone about things happening within this marriage and whatever is happening, no one is going to believe me, no one is going to help me, everyone is going to judge me because of my skin color. They are going to think that, look, this is an Asian guy and he's the one who is, you know, doing harm to the wife, because she said you guys have a reputation of beating the wives and beating your daughters and sisters, so everyone is going to refuse help to you. And I did believe her, because as I said, it was different for me to be in this country, because I haven't lived here for a long time and I didn't know about a lot of things. And she always used this card of Islamic radicalization, that she's going to tell the police that I have become a radical in the isolation and they are going to arrest me, put me in a cell if I go and tell them. And it was extreme. The abuse, the physical abuse, the emotional abuse, everything was to a point that I said to myself that if I can't be out of this relationship. I'm going to hurt myself. I'm going to do something to myself. So I just wanted to be out. Before I left the flat, I was somehow managed to see this random YouTube video where Molly and Phil in the morning show, they were talking about the domestic abuse happening in the pandemic, in the isolation, and how I can seek help. So that gave me some of the courage that put me in a place where I thought, okay, that is not the case, but what my ex-wife was telling me, I can go and ask the help. So finally, I went to the police. I showed them all the video evidence. I showed them all the text messages of harassment, the threats he used to make. Police was massive, massive help. They supported me in every possible way they can. They helped me. They calmed me down in the police station. They took all the details. The guy, he called his boss because he realized the situation is very serious. So two of the specialist police officers from Shrewsbury Police Station, they came and they took my statement. They asked me questions very professionally. They took all the details, and they did said to me that, look, we are not going to judge you. We are here to help you. And they did. They pointed me in the right direction. I was homeless at that point. They told me to contact the council housing team. They forwarded my case and also asked me to contact the Shropshire Domestic Abuse Services, which the council contacted me. That was really good as well. And they did manage to tell me each and everything. And I personally felt that I wasn't judged at all because of my skin color, because of my background, because of my religion. The only thing that matters to them, that was my safety, and which they took it very seriously. And they were not in any way thinking that everything I'm saying is not true. Whatever I said, they believed it. They wrote everything down. Everything I presented was evidence-based as well, which give them the feeling that, yeah, this guy is, whatever he's saying is true. So their help was, I think was a game changer. And I would say that break the chains. And if I wasn't like in the police station that day, I would have been like in a very miserable and different position. But because of the help from the police, it changed everything. And I am massively thankful to the police, Shropshire Police, who went a step further, you know, to help me, to protect me, to give me all the support and help I needed. So thank you to them as well.
One of the organisations, Shaz, that the police put you in touch with is West Mercia Women's Aid, the organisation that I work for. And you were supported by a couple of my colleagues who work for a service that's called the Independent Domestic Violence Advisor Service. Can you tell us a bit about the support that they gave you and what difference that made?
So when West Mercia Police passed my details to West Mercia Women's Aid, I was contacted by my independent domestic violence advisors, it was. And I would like to mention their name as well. One was Karen and other was Carla. And they began supporting me. When I first received the call from Karen, I was in absolute despair. I was lost and terrified, and I was at a point where I could find help no elsewhere. She clarified everything in my head, validated me and prevented my imminent thoughts of suicide, and made me feel so empowered. And her call made my life bearable again, that someone is out there who can believe my words. It meant so much to me. And throughout the support, I never felt alone. They were always there for me. And they helped me regardless of my background, my race, gender, and above all, the nationality, and provided me all the support I needed. I still remember the words of Karen from her first call, that you are not weak, you are not alone, and you are not to blame. And to be honest, that changed everything for me and gave me the confidence, you know, to keep going. So both Karen and Carla, they treated me like with all the respect and sensitivity. I was actively supported throughout every stage of my involvement with the service, and it was very bold, effective, and coordinated support. Karen, she understood the diverse needs and complexities of the dynamics of violence and abuse I went through. Her commitment and her specialist response towards every situation and advice were very systematic, and she constantly strived for my continuous self-improvement as well. And she helped me like in every possible way she could. She was a driving force of my safety and my support needs. I honestly have been moved to the points of tears on several occasions by the kindness and the compassion shown to me by them. And you know, it was something very, very special from Women's Aid. I would explain the roles of Karen and Carla separately, how they helped me. I'll start with Karen. So Karen, she offered a very sound counsel regarding her role as a specialist, Edwa. She analyzed and understood my situation in the utmost professionalism and helped me to make, you know, self-referrals to the well-being team for the concerns of depression and PTSD as well. And she constantly kept checking on my health and well-being, which I am really pleased that she did. One of the very major factors that helped me improve my well-being was the sexual assault. And she spoke to a specialist organization called Exist Counseling, where she made contact with an independent sexual violence advisor on my behalf, which I could have never done it by myself. And she referred me to that counseling and played a very vital role in the whole process of overcoming the trauma, the abuse and the depression I was going through. On few occasions, I used to get very anxious, you know, whenever the police contacts me and I receive a call from any other organization. But she, you know, supported me. She spoke to them on my behalf on multiple occasions and always entrusted in the social betterment of my life after the violence and abuse. It was a very constructive role she played as my Edwa. Carla, on the other hand, she made me feel I can talk to her and she will listen to me without any judgment. She was there every time. She helped me understood my feelings and supported me with all the court stuff and how it all works. Having such a professional support, it made me able to cope, you know, with the court and legal situations. She handled my case and dealt with it in the court. She was always there, you know, to speak to them on my behalf. And on few occasions when we were under tight deadlines and dates of the court, she went a step further, you know, to handle my case under extreme pressure in a very effective manner. It helped me, you know, massively with my depression as well. And honestly, I can say that nobody in my life has done more for me than Karen and Carla. And together they rebuild my life free from violence and fear. They actually gave me the language I needed to describe what I had been through for a very long time. And it's like they gave me a secure base from which I could begin to rebuild my life again. And if it wasn't for West Mercia Women's Aid, I might have gone back to my ex-wife and things would have been totally, totally different and I would have been killed. But they prevented all of that. And I do believe that if it wasn't for this service, I wouldn't have shared my pain, my hurt, but now I feel a lot better. I can sleep calmly. I know that I'm alive, I'm safe. It's not easy, you know, to break away from wallet partner, but I have no shame in saying that West Mercia Women's Aid, they saved my life. Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing your experience and your feelings so candidly, Shaz. I wonder if we could just conclude with you giving us a sense of your hopes for the future.
So my hopes for the future are quite high, and I do believe that future is very bright. I'm a very optimistic person now. a lot of people, they do believe that the emotional abuse and all the trauma, it will heal by time, but it does leave scars, and the help I'm getting from NHS, they've been like super helpful. There's a service, Exist Counseling, they are helping me as well. And they have built my life again from the scratch. I was shattered, but you know, they took all the pieces and they rebuilt the whole structure again of my brain and of what life should be. And day by day, I am improving. A few months ago, the situation was totally different, but now I feel that I'm a better person. My self-esteem, my self-confidence is high again. I have started taking interest again in my job, which I love so much, and it's been progressing very well. And apart from that, you know, the social life, obviously because of the pandemic, we are still in lockdown and we can't go out, we can't do anything. But I personally believe that I am ready, you know, to go out, make friends, to meet people, and start my life again. And life is going to be really good in upcoming months, because I've got the independence. I am not in that abusive relationship anymore where I was. I've got like so much to do, you know, like in my education further, in my further life. And I am prepared for that. I am ready to accept the challenges, and I feel really, really good and hopeful of what has to come. A lot of other factors obviously are there, but I think with the right approach, with the right help, they will be overcome soon. As a person, I feel good. I feel better, and I would, in my ending note, like to pass my gratitude, my thanks to West Mercia Police, to West Mercia Women's Aid, to Exist Counseling, to NHS, to the council, Shropshire Council as well, and to all other people who helped me, supported me, who stood by my side, who've made my life, you know, bearable again. They showed me the right path. They showed me the light. All of them, I am grateful to them. And I do believe that I wouldn't been here without their support and without their help. And their support was vital. And I do believe that a lot of people who are out there listening to this, they should ask help. They should seek help. Help is out there. Help is available. They just need to ask them. They don't need to feel hesitant, you know, to go to the police or to anyone, not to be believed. They will believe you. They will help you. Everyone will help you. And domestic abuse and violence is not something you should tolerate. If you're a victim, you should go out and ask help for people. Life is beautiful when you're out of that relationship. It's good. Thank you to everyone. Thank you.
Sue, I don't think anybody that's just heard what we have heard can't be impacted by the story, and indeed the consequences of some of the actions and the choices and the decisions and the emotions that will have run through that very personal story. As commissioner, I'm proud around the investment I make over victim services, and I've seen about a 60% increase in what I've spent in the last 5 years. And I know it's still a drop in the ocean, and it's story like Shaz's that is a reminder of our need to redouble our efforts to make sure well-funded and well-provisioned victim services are so vital to our community. The other that strikes me from his particular story is that there's nothing straightforward. There's no single act of this is what it is. It's just one black eye equivalent. This is a complex, emotionally charged series of of behaviours that led to a situation, and then a very complex process of getting out of it, to which involved the ability to seek help, to get the right help. And whilst it's pleasing as commissioner to hear the ultimate outcome on the other side, it should be a reminder to those listening to the podcast and to society that this is happening behind closed doors, often with people that are putting on a very brave face. I sometimes use a phraseology, and forgive me if it sounds a little bit patronising, but not every victim looks like a victim, and I don't think we're always good at seeing that. And Shaz's story for me is a powerful reminder as to why that's important. Your service obviously works with a number of people, you know, many different situations, and I know there's no such thing as a typical situation, but some of the features of what we've just heard, how typical are some of those features in what you're now supporting with service users?
There are elements of Shaz's story that are a really good example of some of the key features of domestic abuse. He was in a position where he was able to be manipulated and threatened. He was isolated from his family, physically isolated from his family, and then further isolated from family and friends. He was coerced. He was put on the back foot because of his status in this country. I think he had his passport taken at one point. So there are examples of how his partner took steps to make sure that he was as isolated and vulnerable and easy to manipulate as possible. And those are all of the typical traits of a domestically abusive relationship that we see every day, most of the time, for women. But this illustrates that men can be in vulnerable positions too. And where they are with someone who is prepared to exploit that vulnerability to their own ends, then they too need to have as much information about how they can, about what their rights are, and support in making sure that they can free themselves from that situation. They need those services too.
In terms of relationships, there are inequalities sometimes in relationships, aren't there? And I've always thought about domestic abuse as being when somebody's willing to exploit those inequalities. And to hear the story about the passport, as you've alluded to, and the access to resources to be able to go and do what you want to do, for me, a really key part of exploitation of inequalities that we as a society need to be better about dealing with, because the impact of some of those might not have immediately been apparent to those in and around that couple. And as we as a society, I think, become more savvy to what they might or might not be, not only can we support our young people to grow up into healthy relationships to try and stop it happening, but also where it is happening to recognise the signs more clearly. Because that fear of threatening somebody's immigration status, you know, if you don't do what I say, you know, your immigration status might be, challenged or those types of things. And I think that kind of exploitation is only really in recent years becoming a little more understood by the masses than it has been. And as I said before, it's heartwarming of the more positive outcome in terms of getting the right support, but it's a very sad story that of what had happened to an individual. You're obviously involved because you're the organisation you work for in a whole system of support that can be out there to protect and then support people who might be able to find might find themselves in this situation. And I'm interested to just bring to life some of what you would say to somebody who is listening who might be thinking, well, I'm being domestically abused, or somebody who's listening who might think that somebody they know or related to might be. What, just give some ideas about how somebody might either get more information or more help to the services that are out there.
Just from a very practical point of view, we have a domestic abuse helpline that's staffed 24 hours of the day, 365 days a year, and that helpline is open to anybody. So if there are male victims out there that want to talk to someone, and sometimes that's the first time that someone will have talked about how they feel and the circumstances that they're in. So that conversation is incredibly important, and they need to talk to someone who's prepared to listen and to understand. And they can, of course, call that helpline, or indeed they can contact if they're in Worcestershire, there's a male victim helpline that they can contact, and they will get through to the male victim worker. So that first conversation can take place just through the helpline. And then behind that, there may be other services that can be provided that can help that person. But I can't emphasize enough, particularly for male victims, that they feel able to pick up the phone and just start that conversation, because talking to someone who understands and who says, you're not the only person, this is domestic abuse, and reflects back to you that it's not your fault, that what you describe is part of just what you've described, John, which is about the exploitation of inequality in relationships and of vulnerability in order to control and victimize a partner. If we can make sense of that to anyone who calls us, but as I say, for today particularly, For men who aren't used to seeing themselves in those kind of circumstances, then that is the most important first step. Obviously, if there are men who fear for their safety, then I would say call the police. Always call the police. Any victim of domestic abuse who fears for their personal safety should first and foremost call the police, and the police will respond in an understanding and proactive way in West Mercia. We can attest to that, regardless of whether you're a woman or a man. But if that concern about personal safety or immediate personal safety isn't there, and someone just wants to talk to someone else who understands the impact of living with domestic abuse on an individual and can do that active listening and help you to start to unravel and make sense for yourself about what that experience has been and what impact that has had on you and what you would like then to do next, then that's the thing I would urge everyone to consider first and foremost.
Because for me, Sue, there's some very clear, distinct messages in there around the, if you're in danger, there is help for you right now. Yeah. And the other one is about the supporting the journey. If it doesn't feel right, if there does need to be support in there, that you're not alone is for me been a very central message. And I was trying to draw it out a bit with Shaz before around there's no such thing as a typical example, but right, there are lots of very common features. And whilst your circumstances as a survivor will be unique to you, there are other people who will be able to understand. They will be able to empathize authentically because they have knowledge of it. And also, I also refuse to believe there's no situation that can't be improved. And re-empowering somebody who's been exploited or abused by somebody else, I think is a really important journey that has to be done in a very sympathetic and indeed structured way. And that's why services such as Women's Aid and others that we're lucky to have in West Mercia are so important. And for me, one of the reasons why investment in victim services is a no-brainer, because You know, it's a quality service delivered, and hearing the outcome from people like Shaz is a reminder to us all that actually you don't have to suffer. If you've got the strength or ability to be able to come forward and seek help, the help will be there. And it's not about having something done to you, it is about putting you back in charge. And that re-empowerment for me as commissioner has been really important. Sue, I am incredibly proud, as I've said, to this podcast of being a partner with the BCS in delivering a lot of these services. Because whilst you know, chunks of the money come from me, you know, it's not me that does the doing. It's you guys and the people that work in your organization, and I'm in awe of the work that you do. And indeed, this last 12 months have been testament to our adaptability, and your organization's had to adapt and change along with the rest of society. So it is a huge, great big thank you from me and you, to your organization, for the work that you do for our communities. We literally couldn't do it without you. And I know people like Shaz, and you only had to hear towards the end, it's quite humbling to hear the organizations that he lists that they had help from. And, you know, that gratitude out there of lives that are being changed, you know, is an awe-inspiring tale. Mm-hmm. Thank you hugely for joining me today and talking about a difficult subject, but a really important subject around domestic abuse that is in our society, and some of the steps that we are doing towards not only supporting those that need the support, but also around bringing it to the public's view, because I believe that without public's ownership and understanding of the impact of this, we will never eradicate this from our society. And as we evolve as a society, we must be committed to eradicating domestic abuse and abuse within relationships as we mature as a society, because, you know, it has been a long time coming, and we're not that far away from it's only a domestic. Well, luckily we have moved on from some of that language, but I'm absolutely committed that we must carry on that march unrelented. And thank you for joining and talking about it today. It's been incredibly helpful and powerful.
Yeah, no, thanks for the opportunity, John. I've appreciated it.
And thank you to our listeners today. So as ever, more information around the services provided by Women's Aid are on their website, and more generally the services that I commission are available on my website if you put either organisations into your search engine. West Mercia Police also have some details around services that you can access in a confidential and indeed very discreet way for those that need it. And the message, I hope, is clear from anybody out there today who is either suffering domestic abuse themselves or somebody that you know that you suspect might be, that help is out there. You will always be listened to, you will always be taken seriously, and you don't have to suffer in silence. So thank you very much for listening to today's podcast.